French pianist Jean-Yves Thibaudet hit a big milestone on September 7th. He marked his 60th birthday. He thought about having a big party, but, you know, the pandemic got in the way, so he took a trip to Hawaii instead. And he created a new project where he was given carte blanche to record anything he wanted, personal favorites that he had never recorded before. As it turns out, it was a silver lining of the pandemic. You'll hear him tell that story and much more about this new release on this episode of New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julia Macher. First of all, happy birthday, Jean-Yves.
Thank you, Julie.
You celebrated a big milestone on September 7th. How did you mark the occasion?
Well, I was actually in Hawaii. For a long time, I contemplated, do I do a party, small party, big party, no party? And then now with the pandemic still going on, it just was very complicated. I have friends all over the world and nobody could travel. And at the end of the day, I decided, you know what? How about I just do something without the party, just my own pleasure? And I wanted to go somewhere very beautiful. And being in the States was easy. I don't have to have a passport and go through borders. So I decided to go to Hawaii.
Oh, that sounds heavenly. You're also celebrating with the release of your special solo recording that features you playing music just for yourself.
Yes.
And it's also music that you haven't recorded before. Is that right?
Absolutely. That was the first rule of the album was like, okay, carte blanche, you do whatever you want, but it has to be new material, nothing you have previously recorded.
How challenging was that to come up with 24 pieces that you had never recorded?
Well, actually, you know, I could do another four or five albums like that, I'm sure. There's so much material. And also there's so many pieces that I love in this world and that I've not recorded. So actually, the big challenge was actually just to choose, was not to find them, was to choose which one I would put in that particular CD because the list was going on and on and on.
So you might have to make volume two of this, right?
There you go. Yeah, of course.
The recording opens with a suite from the film Pride and Prejudice, and it features many important moments in the film. How did you decide which moments to highlight?
This is something we did together with Dario. But Dario is an extraordinary composer, and we're very close friends. And that film and that score was something very important and special in my life, which is why I wanted it not only to be in the record, but also even start that album, because it's a very special place. So obviously solo piano, he had to do something special. And I said, Dario, would you please make a suite out of the movie? And I have to say that he's the one who chose, and it should be, because he's the composer, what he thought was the most important and how he could do the piece, put the piece together, because it's all solo, no more orchestra. And he came up with this gorgeous, gorgeous suite. And I just love it. I think it works perfectly beautiful at the piano. You don't need to have anything else. It's very rare to see how a score sometimes can survive outside of a movie, because you always think of a score in the movie, and then that's the end of it. You never hear the score again. It has to be really great music, and this is the case in this one. It just has its own life outside of the movie, and I think people will be happy to hear again this beautiful music that they love, and just in a different, just at the piano. I think it's just a very, very nice new addition to the repertoire.
You said that this film, Pride and Prejudice, is very special to you. Why is that?
Well, it is for lots of reasons, but I think the main reason is that piece has opened so many doors in my life. I just think it has reached so many people in the world, like in millions, in dozens of millions. I mean, it's unbelievable how many people have heard and seen the movie and heard the music. And I think it's something that is absolutely impossible to achieve, however great your career is as a classical musician. We just cannot reach all those people. We would need to have 100 lives to play enough concerts and reach enough people. So this is our occasion to reach people that maybe are not so familiar with classical music, but that just love music. They hear this piece. And I cannot tell you how many people, still now, every single concert, I have people coming at the end of the concert, coming to say hi to me and tell me, oh, this is my first concert. I just came because I saw your name and I said, oh, that's the guy who played in Pride and Prejudice. And I love that score so much. So I brought with me my fiancé, or it's always very special. It's always very touching. And those people have no idea what they're going to listen to. They just come because they like Pride and Prejudice. And that's, for me, the greatest thing. And there's so many people out there, and they will listen to that. And then suddenly they look at my name. And then now you Google, they say, oh, he plays that. Oh, he plays this and that. And they're going to go to listen to it. And this is for us new people listening to our music. And it's so important.
I love how, as a classical artist, you're not afraid to dabble in other genres, if you will. Some classical artists might not be willing to do that. Why have you decided to do that?
I've done that since I can remember that I'm playing music. I mean, maybe not when I was right at the beginning of a kid, but since I'm a teenager, for example, jazz has always been an incredible fascination. And all kind of other music. I mean, I think music is, you cannot just be in your field and just play your music and close your ears and your eyes to the rest. I think Duke Ellington is the one who said there's only two kind of music, the good one and the bad one. And I couldn't agree more. So obviously everything I play on this album is all the good one. But there's so many fabulous music, and I'm a very curious person in general for everything in life, whether it's food, whether traveling, I mean everything. And I'm always willing to try something. If I don't like it, I just won't do it a second time, but I want to try it. So for me, it's normal to play all this kind of music. And in my career up to now, I've done so many different, besides just playing all the regular classical standard repertoire, I played with singers, I played a lot of chamber music, then I played some jazz, then I've done a lot of soundtracks. I mean, I've done all, and I'm always apt for a new experience, and I'm always interested in it. So I think this album, the choice of the pieces and the variety, I think just shows what, you know, my personality, me as a person. It really is very, I think, close to what I am in life.
Jean-Yves, tell me about the Chopin Waltz featured on this recording and the connection that it has to your childhood.
The connection to my mother is the little Chopin Waltz, the A minor waltz, which is a piece that we had. I mean, my mother was playing the piano, my sister was playing the piano, and when I grew up, it's probably one of the first sounds that I heard at the piano, being three or four, was probably that little Chopin Waltz, because they were playing it at home. And I still have this score that my mother was using, and it was all the marks on it. And also, it was very cute. Whenever later I would have a score, whenever she would buy a score that I would perform and learn, she would just write my name on the score, just so that nobody else would take the score at school. So I have all those annotations with my name, and then sometimes the dates when I started working on it. And this particular one has lots of things written on it. So it's a very beautiful piece, and it's also a piece that Chopin, I think, wrote when he was 11 for his mother, of all things. So it's a very touching, very simple waltz. It's a kind of posthum. It's at the end of the volume. It's not part of all the big famous waltzes. And it's not difficult technically, but it's a very, very sweet and very touching, tender little waltz.
You pay tribute to the great Spanish pianist Alicia de la Rocha with the piece The Lady and the Nightingale by Granados. Why did you choose this piece to honor her?
It's a piece that I love. In any case, I it's true that I completely think of her when I play it, and I'm almost, I don't want to say ashamed, but almost like I think nobody should play that piece, because she just played it. It belonged to her. I mean, this repertoire, I think she owned completely. I was lucky to hear her many times play Defalia, Granados. I mean, all this incredible Spanish music, and she just played it like I think no one else will ever be able to play it. But, you know, it's beautiful music. So I think it's sad to have it out of the repertoire. So I pushed myself, okay, let's do it. And I just chose it because I think it's just a beautiful piece of music. The chords are so, so wonderful. The harmonies are so, so beautiful. And I love the effects of the birds, all the trills. I think it just is really beautiful and fun to play. And I had to do something to Alicia because I just had such great admiration for her.
You met her a few times. What do you remember most about those times that you met her?
Her incredible, how modest, do we say modesty in English? Is that a word that exists? Oh yeah, she was so humble, so modest, such a beautiful person, so sweet and gentle. And I have to say, one of the first memories when I met her one of the first time is I was very young. She was playing a big recital at the Mozart Festival in New York in Avery Fisher Hall. Then it was called Avery Fisher Hall. And they always had, before the big star, they had, I think at 7, from 7 to 7:30, was a young artist that would come and play just an hour before. And they asked me to do it. And boy, was I proud to kind of open the show, you know, for like me opening the number for Alicia de la Rocha. And I played two Mozart sonatas. And I remember she was back there and she was ever so sweet. And then, of course, I stayed for her album. And then I kind of left stage when she was ready to go on. And it was really, really special. And from that day, whenever we would encounter, you know, we would be able to see each other in life, it was always with great, great pleasure. And I heard her many, many times. And she gave me hours of incredible pleasure and inspiration because she really was a remarkable lady. And she had such tiny little hands. I mean, I want to say that because people who haven't met her don't realize, but her hands was like a fifth of my hands. And yet she played Rachmaninoff's third piano concerto. She played everything. It was just stunning. The power that she had with her little hands was just something else.
You created the piano arrangement of Poulenc's song Hotel. What kind of liberties were you able to take with this piece, performing it without vocals?
Well, I suddenly became the singer. I became the star, the one that, you know, I can hold on the note if I feel like it. I don't have to follow anybody. I could just be completely in charge. And I'm kidding. It's just such a beautiful piece. I actually have not changed a note in it as far as the music goes. I just incorporated the line of the singer, obviously, in the piano part, which was quite difficult, quite challenging, because the piano part is quite busy with all this big chord, and then you have to voice it, so it sounds like... So it was a very interesting work, but and again, this is another self-indulging pleasure, is that it gives me an occasion to play this piece that I love so much. When I'm alone, I don't always have a singer around the corner that can just come in and play it. So I can sit down now, play it for me, play it for my friend, and now I can share it with the rest of the world.
You have played with a lot of singers,
yes,
including Renee Fleming, who interviews you in the liner notes for this recording. Is there a piece on this new release in honor of her?
There certainly is. I mean, I would say that my playing is in honor of her just because I've learned from Renee so much as a great artist, a great singer. Playing with her has been just the greatest lesson as playing with all the other wonderful singers. It's just that beautiful control of the breathing, the legato, the phrasing. I mean, all the things that don't technically happen at the piano as an instrument. It's a percussive instrument. So it is really a lesson of, and I'm trying to sing with my piano. That certainly is my approach now to music. Now, there is a little story to one of the pieces, of course, is my transcription of When You Wish Upon a Star from Disney's Pinocchio. We actually did a beautiful PBS program around New Year's, was for New Year's Eve, It was called United in Song, The Resilience of American People. It's a beautiful program. There was lots of artists from all kind of different world of music. And I performed some Gershwin from the concerto. She did some other arias. And then we did something together. And she chose When You Wish Upon a Star, which is the most touching and beautiful theme that everybody knows, of course. And it's about the same story than we just did now with Hotel from Poulenc, is that it was such a beautiful arrangement. So Jesse Kissel did an arrangement for us. Then I started playing with it, you know, rearranging, changing it. Then we did it with her. And then I came back home and I just was so, I mean, I just adored this piece so much. I was thinking, God, I need to play it just for my own pleasure. And I started incorporating yet again the singing line into the piano. And I said, okay, I can make something work here. And I worked quite a bit. It took, with the pandemic, I had all this time, which was fantastic. So I just sat down and I played almost every day. I was making progresses and I finally came up with this arrangement. And it gives me so much joy that I wanted to share it. And that certainly is a little special gift for Renee.
Morton Gould's Boogie Woogie Etude offers a completely different mood. What do you love most about playing this piece?
Oh my God, it's fun. It is so much fun. You feel like you're just attacking the piano suddenly. I was very lucky to meet Jerry Lee Lewis in 2000 for another, I think it was PBS, I forgot who did anyway, with the Smithsonian Celebration of the Piano. And they had pianists from all over, jazz pianists, I mean, rock and roll pianists, all kind of beautiful pianists to do the show. And he was there. And for me to meet him was, I have a picture with him and that treasure. It was amazing. And that piece made me think of him because you can just picture him playing. You're only expecting the time when he's going to put his feet on the piano and start, you know, doing his number there. But it's also a piece that I heard, I have to say, Shura Cherkassky, wonderful pianist, was playing it once as an encore in Amsterdam. And I just thought it was such a crazy piece. I asked him, I said, what is it, Shura? And he gave me the name, titled the score. And I said, one day I'm going to play that piece. And I never had time to learn it. And again, during the pandemic, I said, okay, that piece is going to go on that album because it's way too much fun. And I'm going to learn it and now I can play it as an encore myself.
Ciccolini was one of your teachers, and he often played an encore that you feature on Carte Blanche. And it took you quite a while to get the music from him, and it eventually did happen. Can you talk about how you finally got that music?
Yes, it's that beautiful Kuppelwieser Walzer from Strauss. I mean, Schubert Strauss. It's a complicated story. It's both. It's a little, so it's the story of the piece quickly is Schubert wrote on a napkin after a wedding to the bride, a little theme, just a theme with a few notes. He gave it to her. Then she goes home. Then time passes. And now in 1943, Richard Strauss is in Vienna, sees that little napkin piece on the wall at the residence of those people. And he says, oh my God, this is so touching. Would you allow me to put in the music and make a piece out of it? And they said, yeah, absolutely. And he makes that beautiful, very short little waltz. Now, my teacher, Ciccolini, used to play it all the time, and I heard him so many times, and I was so, each time, almost crying. It's such tender, touching music, and I was always asking him, and I said, do you have the score? And he said, no, I'm sorry. He said, I don't know, I have something somewhere, but I've lost it many years ago. I just play it. And I said, well, that doesn't help me. And I said, so time passes, and one day, late in his life, at his house in Paris, he comes up with a piece of paper, like a trash. I mean, really, I said, what is it? Well, he said, here, this is all I have for that piece. And it's like a copy of a fax that was copied and refaxed to him. I mean, God knows what it is. You can hardly see the notes. It's like flies on a piece of paper. But enough, and he plays it for me, and I make correction, and enough for me to learn it and put it in my head forever. And this is how I was able to learn that piece and play it myself many, many times as an encore. And I think now it is published. I understand people tell me now that it is published, so I hope people can now play it, because it's a very, very, very touching piece.
You do put a piece on this recording by Elgar, which is a tribute to Aldo Ciccolini. Can you talk about that, please?
Yes, Salut d'amour. Yes, it's a beautiful piece that most people will know because it's played often at the violin. And it's been transcribed for probably other instrument as well. But in this case, Aldo himself made an arrangement of that piece where he plays solo piano, and it is so gorgeous. Same thing, I just heard it and I wanted to play it. And now that he's not around, I was thinking, well, if he doesn't play it anymore, somebody's got to play it. And just as a tribute to him, he was such an important mentor and person in my life that I just feel like it's kind of with this piece and with so many other things, he's still with us. And the difficulty with that one is that there's no score. I mean, there are scores of the piece, but not his arrangement. So this one, I just sat down like a complete student and with a piece of paper, and I just rewrote. I just wrote from listening to him. There's quite a few YouTube performances of him playing it, and I just wrote it just note by note, and it took me lots of time, lots of patience, but I did it with love, and I was just able to retranscribe basically on a piece of paper what he does. And then, you know, whatever. Now I play it with my soul and my interpretation, but it really is his piece.
There is a concert etude by Pierre on this recording, and I have to tell you, I am out of breath just listening to you play this piece. How do you not run out of steam as you're playing it?
Yeah, that's probably one of the most virtuoso. It's a real show-off piece. I mean, that's really a pyrotechnical little wizard kind of a piece. I have to say it is very well written for the piano. So I don't mean it's easy, but it's very pianistic. So it is very difficult, but at least it's not uncomfortable. It takes lots of work. You have to be really in good shape. You have to practice your scales and everything when you and be warmed up. But it's a piece that I used to play a lot when I was younger. It's a piece I played a lot as an encore in concerts, and then I kind of forgot a little bit about it, and then I put that album together. I said, well, that's a fun piece to put in there. We also wanted to have some up, you know, we have a lot of slow pieces, this more ballads can, we need to have something also up and fun and fast, and we need to have a variety, and it's also not very popular, so I said, let's shed some lights on a piece that people might not know, and I enjoyed playing it. It's great fun.
How does Earl Wilde make Gershwin's Embraceable You sound so French?
Well, that's why I particularly chose that one, I think. He wrote 7 etudes on Gershwin songs, and this is the one that always was, I don't want to say my favorite, but they're all quite extraordinary, but this one really speaks to me because, as you say, it is a completely Debussy, Ravelian, it's very impressionist. I mean, the way he wrote it is very fluid. And it just feels great. And I just love the theme. I love his arrangement. He was a phenomenal artist, pianist, arranger. He did so many wonderful transcriptions that people don't know so much about. But this one has been part of my life for a long time, and I've been playing a lot as an encore, and it will always stay. It's one of my real favorite pieces. And it feels very, very comfortable playing. Yeah, I feel completely at home.
You finished this recording with Barber's Adagio, and you've said that this was the most difficult piece for you on this recording. Why?
It certainly was. Well, it's an incredible challenge because here you are at the piano, the percussive instrument. You hit a note, a hammer, and that's it. And then I'm supposed to hold it for so long with a very slow piece without a bow. It's a string quartet. It was written for a string quartet. So I thought first that it was impossible. I kind of gave myself a challenge. I said, okay, let's see if we can make it work. And I didn't know if it was going to work and if I was going to put it on the album or not. I worked, again, hours on it, transcribing the string quartet exactly. I take exactly the same notes, same tessituras. I don't change anything to it, just at the piano. But the difficulties to exactly hold those long notes, sustain them. Also hear all the different voices in there, the voicing of the violin, just still hold that. And suddenly the viola takes this. I mean, it's just, it's a mesmerizing piece. It really is hypnotizing, it's timeless. It's a phenomenal, great, great piece of music that I think is extremely touching. And for example, it could not be anywhere else at the recording than at the end, because after that, what do you play? So I was very happy to do that. It was an experience, and we did it 3 or 4 times when we recorded at the Colburn School. And I was the first time I went to listen because I had no clue what it sounded like. And I have to say, I said, well, this, I think we can make it work. And I did it. And then that last take, I thought was really, I mean, the best I could do with my instrument. And it's a different approach to the piece, but I think it, in its own way, it works. And it's so beautiful that I had a great pleasure, you know, putting out this album.
As you were putting this recording together, what was most memorable for you?
I mean, every piece that we went through now, quite a bit of them, every piece has a story, has a meaning, has a memory. I think it's a very personal, very intimate. It's like, it's something that never really can do in an album, because you're doing an album, I don't know, it's Brahms or this or that. But this was an album where I was given, really, literally carte blanche, where I could choose whatever, and I made my little list of the pieces I loved and I wanted to record that I'd never recorded. So it was a very special experience, and it made me, I think it also is, it happened in this very particular time in the world with this pandemic, and I think this is a big part of it. It might not have happened, or not like this and with these pieces, without the pandemic as well, because I had all this time to do searching for the pieces, putting those new pieces, organizing them, transcribing them, and just living with them for so many months. I usually have 15 concerts a week, and I have to do this, and a concerto there, and a recital. And here, I could really live with that and just do it slowly at my pace and enjoy it. And so it was it's something that will remain a really special time in my life and in the world. And I think it's important to have those. It's something I will remember. That album happened now, and this is what happened. And I really did it with the greatest love and joy. I had really had such a good time doing it.
A new recording featuring French pianist Jean-Yves Thibaudet. It's called Carte Blanche. Thanks to Valerie Kaler, our producer of New Classical Tracks. And since you're clearly a music fan, let me tell you about another podcast you might enjoy. It's the Piano Puzzler Podcast. Every week, host Fred Child invites Bruce Adolf into the studio to play one of his brilliant musical mind games. Bruce takes a familiar tune and disguises it in the style of a classical composer, and then a contestant calls in to try to solve the riddle. It's a lot of fun. If you're up for the challenge, subscribe to The Piano Puzzler wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast is New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher.